This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to deliver negative feedback positively. A practical system for honest conversations that build trust, not resentment. In short, after reading this, you will know how to deliver negative feedback positively in a structured, respectful way that protects trust and motivates real change. Prepare your feedback around specific behaviour, not personal judgement. Frame the conversation to open dialogue, not deliver a verdict. Close every feedback session with a clear, agreed path forward. Definition: delivering negative feedback positively means communicating critical observations in a way that focuses on specific behaviour, respects the person's dignity, and gives them a clear path to improve. It separates the problem from the person and turns a difficult conversation into a productive one. You sat down with someone on your team. You had a real concern. You wanted to say it clearly, but somewhere between your intention and your words, it went wrong. They got quiet, or defensive, or they nodded and did nothing. And you left the conversation feeling like you'd made things worse, not better. That moment is what poor feedback delivery costs you. It is not just awkward, it damages trust, stalls performance, and leaves the real problem sitting untouched. The reason most people struggle to deliver negative feedback positively is not that they lack courage. It is that they have no reliable structure. They wing it and hope for the best, or they overprepare to the point of softening the message until nothing useful remains. In this guide, you will get a clear, practical process for delivering critical feedback that you can use immediately. If you want to understand how emotional intelligence shapes these conversations, the article on emotional intelligence and feedback conversations is a strong companion to this one. Why giving critical feedback is harder than it looks. Knowing that feedback matters and actually being able to give it well are two very different things. Most people know they should address performance problems early. Most people do not. Here is why this is so hard in practice. Fear of the emotional reaction. You do not know how the other person will respond, and the uncertainty is enough to keep many people silent. Nobody wants to be the source of someone else's distress, especially in a professional setting where composure is expected from everyone. No clear language for the moment. You know what the problem is, but finding the right words under pressure is genuinely difficult. Many people either overexplain, ramble, or retreat into vagueness to soften the blow, which means the real message never lands. Conflicting instincts. Part of you wants to be kind. Part of you wants to be direct. Those two impulses often feel mutually exclusive, so you end up doing neither properly, producing a conversation that is neither honest nor gentle. Previous attempts that went badly. If you have tried giving honest feedback before and it damaged a relationship or escalated into conflict, your nervous system remembers. You're not just giving feedback now. You're also managing the memory of the last time it went wrong. Timing pressure. Feedback rarely arrives at a convenient moment. You're busy, they are busy, and waiting for the perfect time means it never comes. When you do finally speak, the moment may have passed its usefulness. The goal is not to eliminate these difficulties. It is to build a system that works in spite of them. The foundation. What you need before you start. Before you begin, there are three things that need to be clear. Number one, your intent must be genuine. Feedback given to punish, to assert authority, or to protect yourself is not feedback. It is criticism in disguise. Before any conversation, ask yourself honestly whether you're trying to help this person improve. If the answer is yes, proceed. If something else is driving you, pause and examine that first. Number two, the behavior, not the person, is the subject. You are addressing what someone did, not who they are. This distinction is not just kind, it is accurate. People can change behavior. They cannot change their character on request, and being told their character is the problem gives them nowhere to go. Number three, privacy is non-negotiable. Delivering critical feedback in front of others is not feedback. It is humiliation. Every difficult conversation must happen privately, where the other person can respond honestly without an audience judging their reaction. Get these right first. The steps that follow will not work without them. Step one, prepare your specific observations. Preparation is the step most people skip, and it is the one that determines everything else. Vague feedback, such as your attitude has been off lately, or I feel like you're not really engaged, tells the person nothing they can act on. It also triggers defensiveness, because it sounds like a character verdict, not an observation. You need specifics what exactly happened, when it happened, and what the observable impact was. Before the conversation, write down your answers to these three questions. Write them. Do not just think them. The act of writing forces clarity. Identify the specific behavior you observed, not your interpretation of it. Note when and where it occurred, with enough detail that the person will recognize the moment. Define the concrete impact. What did it affect? Who did it affect? And how? Write one sentence that summarizes what you want to be different going forward. Read what you've written, and remove any language that sounds like a judgment of character. Here is what this looks like in practice. Suppose a team member interrupted a client during a presentation and talked over their questions three times. Your note might read, during Tuesday's client call, you interrupted the client mid-sentence three times before they had finished their question. The client grew quieter as the call progressed, and they have not responded to our follow-up email. That is specific. That is observable. That gives the person something real to work with. When you walk into the room with that level of clarity, the conversation has a much better chance of going somewhere useful. Step 2. Choose the right setting and timing. Where and when you have this conversation shapes how the other person receives it. A feedback conversation held in a hallway, in the 5 minutes before a meeting, or immediately after an incident, when emotions are still high, is unlikely to go well. The person is not ready, and neither are you. Good timing is not about waiting indefinitely. It is about choosing a moment when genuine attention is possible on both sides. Schedule a private meeting and give the person enough notice to know something important is coming, without leaving them anxious for days. Choose a neutral space where neither of you is on display and both of you can speak freely. Avoid giving critical feedback on a Friday afternoon, before a major deadline, or directly after a stressful event. Give yourself enough time for the conversation to breathe. A 15-minute slot signals that you want to get to it quickly, not that you want to resolve it. When the person arrives and you have a proper setting, something important shifts. They can tell you are taking this seriously. That signals respect, and respect makes people more able to hear what you are about to say. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last, and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book 8 Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Step 3. Open the conversation without a verdict. How you open the conversation determines whether the other person hears you or spends the whole time defending themselves. If you lead with a problem, the person's instinct is to explain, justify, or counter. That is a natural human response. Your job is to open the conversation in a way that invites them in, rather than putting them on trial. This does not mean hiding the reason you're meeting. It means framing the conversation as a shared one. Start by stating that you want to talk about something that has been on your mind, and that you value their perspective on it. Name the topic directly without launching into the full observation. I want to talk about how the client call went on Tuesday. Ask one open question before you state your own view. How do you feel it went from your side? Listen to their answer without interrupting. What they say next tells you a great deal about how much they already know. Then move into your prepared observation, calmly and directly. Here is a short script for the opening. I wanted to find time for just the two of us. I want to talk about Tuesday's client call. Before I share what I noticed, I'm curious, how did you feel it went? Then stop talking. Their answer is not a preamble to skip over. It is information that will help you calibrate the rest of the conversation. The moment they speak, you are in a two-way conversation rather than a performance review. That small shift changes everything. Step 4. State the observation and its impact clearly. This is the step where most people either soften the message past recognition or harden it into an accusation. Neither works. You need to say what you observed, plainly, and without editorializing, and then explain why it matters. Use the preparation you did in step 1. State the behavior, state the impact, and let those two things carry the weight of the conversation without adding interpretation or character judgment on top. Use language that describes what you saw or heard, not what you concluded. I noticed, and I observed, rather than you always or you clearly don't. State the impact in terms of outcomes, not emotions. The client disengaged during a call rather than I was embarrassed. Avoid the word, but when following a positive comment, it erases everything before it. Use an instead, or simply separate the two thoughts. Keep your tone level. The calmer you are, the more weight your words carry. If you're looking for a structured approach to make this step even more reliable, the SBVI method is worth your time. It gives you a clean framework for separating situation, behavior, and impact in exactly the way this step requires. Step 5. Invite the response before moving to solutions. After you've stated your observation and its impact, stop talking and let the other person respond. This is harder than it sounds. There is a strong pull to keep going, to soften what you just said, or to jump straight to solutions before the discomfort has settled. Resist all of it. The pause after your observation is not empty space. It is where the real conversation begins. Ask a direct, open question after your observation. What is your sense of what happened? Accept that the first response may be defensive. Do not escalate. Just acknowledge it. I hear that. Tell me more about that. If they agree with what you have said, resist the urge to immediately move to problem solving. Give the acknowledgement a moment to settle. If they offer additional context you did not know, adjust your understanding. Good feedback is a conversation, not a verdict. Here is what this exchange might sound like. You have described the specific behavior and its impact. Then you say, I wanted to share that with you and hear how it looked from your side. They say, honestly, I felt the client was not engaged from the start and I was trying to move things along. You respond, that is useful context. I want to understand what you were reading in the room. And I also want to share what I observed the client doing in response. That is a real conversation. That is where improvement actually happens. Listening here is not passive. It is one of the most active things you can do. For more on how to make sure voices are genuinely heard in professional conversations, the article on how to ensure every participant gets heard offers practical tools you can adapt here. Step 6. Agree on a specific path forward. A feedback conversation without a clear outcome is just an uncomfortable exchange. You need to close with something both of you have agreed on. This does not need to be elaborate. It needs to be specific and mutual. A vague agreement to do better is not an agreement at all. It is a way of ending the conversation without resolving it. Name what needs to change how and by when. Ask the other person what they think they could do differently in that situation next time. Add your own suggestion if theirs is insufficient, but lead with theirs whenever possible. People commit to what they own. State the agreed change in plain terms and confirm that you both understand it the same way. Set a natural checkpoint. Let us check in on this after the next client call. Offer your support explicitly. If you want to talk through how to handle it differently, I am available for that. The outcome of this step is that both people leave the room knowing what was said, what was agreed, and what happens next. That clarity is what separates a feedback conversation from a confrontation. And giving people a consistent channel for this kind of dialogue is exactly what well-designed feedback loops are built to provide. Step 7. Follow up without hovering. The feedback conversation is not the end of the process. What you do in the days after it matters just as much. If you disappear after a difficult conversation, the person may interpret your silence as ongoing disapproval. If you hover and check in too frequently, they may feel monitored rather than supported. Your goal is a natural, light presence that signals you are interested in their progress, not watching for failure. Acknowledge any positive change you observe in the behavior you discussed specifically, and promptly, at your agreed checkpoint, ask how they feel things have been going rather than launching into an assessment. If the behavior has not improved, have another conversation. Do not let it slide and do not let it fester. Keep a brief private note of what was discussed and agreed so that your follow-up is grounded in specifics, not impressions. When done well, this follow-up is what builds a culture where honest feedback is expected and trusted. It signals that you took the conversation seriously and that you care about the outcome, not just the moment of delivery. That is how feedback strengthens relationships rather than straining them, which is precisely the goal explored in How to Give Feedback That Strengthens Team Synergy. Adapting this process for remote teams. Remote teams present a specific challenge when it comes to delivering critical feedback. The absence of physical presence removes the nonverbal signals that carry so much of a difficult conversation's tone and intent. Use video, not text or email. Delivering negative feedback by email or message is almost always a mistake. Without facial expression, tone of voice, and body language, your words carry more risk of misinterpretation. Schedule a video call and treat it with the same preparation you'd give a face-to-face meeting. If a written follow-up is ever needed after a difficult exchange, The guidance in how to write a professional apology email at work offers a useful model for tone and structure. Create the right environment deliberately. In person, a private room signals safety. On a video call, you have to create that deliberately. Ask the person to find a private space for the call. Turn off notifications. Tell them at the start that this is a private conversation and that you are fully present for it. Allow more time for the pause. On a call, silences feel longer and more charged than they do in person. Practice sitting with the pause after your observation rather than filling it with qualifications or reassurances. The pause still does its job. It just requires more courage online. Check in on the emotional register. Without body language, you may miss signs of distress that would be obvious in a room. Ask directly, "How are you feeling about what we have discussed?" Do not assume that a calm voice means a calm person. The core process holds in every context. Only the execution changes. Common mistakes to avoid when giving difficult feedback. Let me tell you about the mistakes I see most often. I have made most of them myself. The mistake: burying the criticism between so many compliments that the real message is lost. Why it happens: we want to soften the blow, so we lead with praise, mention the problem briefly, then return to praise. The other person leaves remembering the positive and missing the point entirely. What to do instead? Be direct without being harsh. You can be respectful and clear at the same time. The compliment sandwich is kindness to yourself, not to them. The mistake: waiting too long to address a problem. Why it happens: we hope it will resolve itself, or we wait for the right moment that never arrives. By the time we speak, the issue is compounded and the feedback is harder to deliver and to receive. What to do instead? Address behavior-based concerns within a few days of observing them. Early feedback is almost always easier than late feedback. The mistake: using always and never in the conversation. Why it happens: frustration makes us reach for sweeping language. You never follow up on time feels satisfying to say when you're irritated, but it is almost never accurate. What to do instead? Anchor your feedback to specific instances. In the last three project handoffs, the follow-up was late as both true and workable. The mistake: making it a one-way download rather than a conversation. Why it happens: we have prepared what we want to say and we want to say it in full, without interruption. This is understandable, but it treats feedback as a performance rather than a dialogue. What to do instead? Stop after stating your observation and ask a genuine question. The response will improve the quality of the outcome. The mistake: apologizing for giving the feedback. Why it happens: we feel guilty about the discomfort we are causing, so we preface the conversation with, "I'm sorry to have to say this," or "I hate doing this." What to do instead? Deliver the feedback with confidence and compassion. Apologizing for it signals that you believe something wrong is happening, which undermines the whole exchange. If a relationship genuinely needs repair after a difficult conversation, the article on how to apologize to a team member addresses that separately. These are not character flaws. They are gaps in the system. Fix the system. Your practical checklist. Use this checklist before you begin and after each feedback session. I have identified the specific behavior, not a general character impression. I can name at least one concrete example with a time and place. I have written down the observable impact of the behavior. I know what I want to be different going forward. I have removed any language that judges the person's character. I have scheduled a private meeting with enough time for a real conversation. I have a genuine opening question ready before I state my observation. I am prepared to listen to the response without immediately countering it. I have a specific, mutual outcome in mind for the close of the conversation. I have planned a natural follow-up checkpoint after the meeting. If you cannot check most of these, that is your starting point. Summary and next steps. You now have a structured, tested process for delivering negative feedback positively in a way that respects both the person and the truth of what needs to be said. That is something most people spend years trying to develop by accident. Prepare with specifics, behavior, moment, and impact in writing before you speak. Choose your setting and timing with as much care as your words. Open the conversation with a question, not a verdict. State the observation clearly and without character judgment. Then stop, listen before you move to solutions. What they say matters. Close with a specific, mutually agreed path forward. Follow up with genuine interest in their progress, not surveillance. The natural next step is to look at the broader skill of giving feedback in a way that strengthens your team rather than fracturing it. The article on how to give feedback that strengthens team synergy builds directly on what you have learned here. If you want a complimentary framework for structuring individual feedback conversations, the piece on how to use the SPVI method is worth an hour of your time. The ability to deliver negative feedback positively is not a gift some people are born with. It is a skill built through preparation, practice, and the courage to say what needs to be said with care for the person in front of you. Master that, and you will earn the kind of trust that takes most leaders a lifetime to build. Frequently asked questions. What does it mean to deliver negative feedback positively? Delivering negative feedback positively means communicating honest criticism in a way that focuses on behavior and improvement rather than blame. It uses clear, specific language, a respectful tone, and a forward-looking framing to motivate change without damaging the relationship or the person's confidence. How do you deliver negative feedback positively without it feeling fake? The key is to be direct and specific rather than burying the criticism in excessive praise. When your feedback is grounded in concrete observations and genuine care for the person's growth, it does not feel false. Honesty delivered with respect reads as authentic, not scripted. What is the best structure for giving negative feedback at work? The most effective structure prepares the person, states the specific behavior, explains the impact, and closes with a clear path forward. Avoid vague complaints and personal judgments. Focus on what happened, why it matters, and what needs to change, in that exact order. When is the right time to deliver critical feedback to a team member? Give feedback as close to the event as possible, but not in the heat of the moment. A private, scheduled conversation is almost always better than an impromptu one. Waiting too long weakens the feedback. Acting too quickly risks an emotional exchange that helps nobody. How do you deliver negative feedback positively to someone who gets defensive? Acknowledge their perspective before adding yours. State facts rather than interpretations, and avoid language that sounds like character judgment. Asking a question, such as how they see the situation, can diffuse defensiveness and open a real conversation rather than a standoff. What is the difference between negative feedback and destructive criticism? Negative feedback targets specific behavior and points toward improvement. Destructive criticism attacks the person, uses sweeping generalizations, and offers no path forward. The intention and the focus are entirely different. One builds accountability, the other builds resentment. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblickthorne.com to get your copy.